Let's talk about first impressions. Maybe the first time you met your partner's parents, or walking into a community group for the first time, or a new job. How did you navigate those new relationships? Sometimes it can seem as if everyone's role is clear from the outset, and sometimes you can be surprised by alliances that can form or reform. But if you're dependent on someone for some of your very basic needs, your relationship can be complicated and needs to be handled carefully. Catherine Marnie is the ABC's Regional Storyteller Scholarship winner for 2019, and her five-part radio series, A Fine Line, investigates the relationships between people with disabilities and their support workers. Catherine, thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary.
Now tell us, from a personal perspective, what have been your interactions and relationships with support workers?
I've had some great relationships, most of them. There are always those ones that don't go so well. I've probably had two that stand out. But by and large, they really make a difference to my life and to the lives of people with other disabilities. But for me, it can be a wonderful rapport. I think I like to think of them similarly to workplace relationships, and whether or not we're friends is one of the things that we explore in this series, but I really like to think of it as a friendly relationship. So I sort of make that distinction.
I'm glad it can be a friendly relationship, because it can be quite an intimate one too, can't it, if someone is having to take care of your personal needs.
Absolutely.
How important is it to get the power balance right?
It's really important, and I guess we're not going to get it right all the time, but it's really important to be aware that there is a power kind of ebbing and flowing. And I think that's not talked about a lot, or is something that I think we're thinking more about in the last few years. And possibly that's because people with disability now have greater choice in who they're choosing as their support workers. And so, it's an ebbing and flowing dynamic, and you don't always get it right, but it's really important that you reflect on it when you can.
So is that greater choice because the NDIS has changed the way you can access support workers?
Absolutely. So it would still be a low percentage, Hilary, but certainly the people that I've been speaking to are choosing to find their support workers outside traditional service providers of disability. So people are looking for people that actually can bring differing life skills and maybe don't have some of the expectations that support workers who have worked in the disability sector for a long time under lots of sort of restrictions restrictions or the sort of focus of their services, now you can really, build your own relationship and choose who you want to be with. And a lot of people are saying, are really liking the freedom of choosing outside of those services.
And you explore some fascinating case studies in your audio series, A Fine Line.
Yep.
Let's hear a little bit from Jacob. He's speaking here via a communication device.
I am 27 years old. I live in my own house with my housemate. I have cerebral palsy. I need a bit of help to do the things I want to do. I need help to get up and ready for the day.
Jane Hoppy is one of Jacob's team of support workers, and she's asking him about what he'd like to do tonight.
Pub.
That time of day?
Tell us a little bit more about Jacob's story.
So Jacob, as he says, is a young man, 27 years old. He's living with flatmates for the first time. He's kicked his mum out of their family home because it's much more accessible for him. So they've had a little bit of a role reversal and the mother's gone. Interesting thing about his story, Hilary, is that because Jacob has difficulties with communication and needs some support with decision making, and he also has a intellectual disability, and he and his family all his life have worked for him to live his life in the community, not have to. He didn't go to, he went all through mainstream education. He hasn't ever spent too much time in sort of programs and services and community events for people with disability. They've worked really hard. that he lives his life in a typical way to his peers. And so one of the things that they very intentionally talk to their support, to Jacob's support workers about, is to share their social networks with him. So when they're choosing who will support him and they're going through that kind of quote-unquote recruitment process, Jacob's mum quite overtly asks that what they would really appreciate of that person is to share their social networks, invite Jacob to things that they're doing, being part of their, you know, friendship groups. And I guess that raises the really interesting question about if you are spending time socialising and that's a key part of your role, then what does that do to the concept of being friends as well as being employer and employee, really?
And did Jacob and his support workers have any thoughts on that?
His support workers did. One of them says, you know, it's choppy. It's both. She definitely sees herself as a friend of his, but she's very aware that at the same time she is being paid to spend time with him. So she talks about sort of that there's a context to that. She's also very aware of the power dynamic, that she is a lot of the time, her name's Lucy, she's aware that a lot of the time she's supporting Jacob with those very intimate personal care tasks, and also, then hanging out with him sort of as mates. So, but both of his support workers that we hear from see it as a friendship. Elements of friendship. That's right.
There's another interesting story. You talked to Jo, who's moving from Brisbane to Geelong, and her support worker, Brendan, is moving in with her. That's a really interesting situation. How do they manage the dynamics there where they're going to be housemates as well as employer and employee effectively?
It's a fascinating story, Hilary. Like, the whole series is based on this premise of, I called it a fine line, but actually there's multiple fine lines, if you like, that we're negotiating. So, yeah, they have the additional one of being housemates, and that's got some – that threw up some issues for the real estate because they're co-tenants on the lease, and the real estate was like, but hang on, you're actually moving into a house with your employer, and so how is all that going to work? Because Jo, as do other people in the series, employs their support worker directly. So they are they take responsibility for the taxes and all those employment related issues. So when the real estate sees the pay slips, they're just like, they can't put all of that together. And that's a completely new arrangement, I would say, since the NDIS.
Well, so, you explore too this idea in the series that the support worker relationship can have some similarities to dating. Things can go really well, and then things can go badly, and you might have to break up with them. How does that play out?
There's the honeymoon period. There's also assumptions of the community around that. So Brendan, who's Joe's support worker, talks about, you know, people think that we're partners, or they assume that we're partners. So that can, it can be a complication. It does feel similar to the partnership relationship. However, it's really important that we remember it's not identical to that, and people with disability and support workers don't find that a helpful comparison and will say, no, don't. Please don't compare. Please don't, put it in that context in how you represent it.
Do romantic relationships ever form and bring their own complications?
They do. I did hear of someone, who ended up, he and his support worker ended up marrying. And, yes, I can't quite get my head around how that might work and the complications it would bring.
And you've talked about sometimes there needing to be a breakup, and I think you spoke to a young woman called Mel who's been managing her own care for quite a long time. What were some of the ways she navigated that situation and set good boundaries around that?
So I think, whenever a relationship ends, regardless of the nature of the relationship, it's going to be tricky. And if you think of this as a professional relationship, but also where you've shared a lot of your life with that person, as Mel had. One of the unique issues that I wonder is specific to people with disability is that you can't necessarily do it when you're working, like if you're in a shift together and the person with and the support worker is assisting you to the bathroom for transport, you don't in the middle of that shift want to say, I'm really sorry, but we need to end it, because then that power dynamic is in, would be sort of the person with disability could potentially even be at risk in that situation, because you wouldn't know how the support worker would react. And so in addition to all of those emotional complexities, Hilary, of having this and the kind of anxiety and fear that you would have around terminating, if you like, ending a working relationship in which you're the boss, you have to factor in how to do that in a way that keeps you safe physically and, yeah, and doesn't increase your vulnerability.
And have you ever been in a situation like that, Catherine?
I have. I don't require personal care, so I didn't have to think about it in terms of my own sort of safety. But yeah, I've had a couple that haven't ended so well, and I think a lot about how I could have managed them differently. I tend to, you know, sort of one in particular, I didn't end it very cleanly. I kind of just ran away, and I regret that. And in another one, we did talk about it, but I had hoped that I might have continued to relate to that person as a friend, but that hasn't ended. That hasn't been the way it's unfolded, and we kind of haven't spoken to each other since.
So. Which is, must be a strange situation when you've been so close to someone.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it is. Yeah, it's the loss of someone, you know, as you say, that you've spent a lot of your time with and often been quite vulnerable with. I think that's another of the fine lines that you have to navigate. So sometimes the support worker is with you in really difficult times. It might be just picking you up for an appointment, which has been difficult, you know, counselling appointments. It might be attending the funeral of someone that you love. So you can really be, and if you're anything like me, like I can't save the crying until later. So they really do, they really are with you in those very sort of tender moments, I guess. And so you do need to have some rapport or that just isn't going to work. So then when it ends, it's quite an intense thing.
Yeah.
And there's a grief around it, I think.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. And I am exactly like you. If the tears are going to come, the tears are going to come. They're coming now. I found it really interesting that you talk about the vulnerability and that I note that the language has changed a lot in the disability sector lately, particularly the phrase support worker replacing carer. Is that an attempt to help with those power dynamics and redress some of that feeling of vulnerability?
Absolutely. Yeah, because people with disability don't want to be, quote, cared for. A lot of times, even if person needs support to make some decisions and to communicate their needs, that's really important that we perceive that the power belongs to the person with a disability and that they are at the centre of the decisions that are being made. And so, people say, you're not caring for me. I don't want a carer. Some people don't even like support worker as a term, Hilary, because they want to find more mainstream relationship. They want to compare it more to other sort of professional relationships. So I'll sometimes refer to my support worker in public as an assistant or my colleague. I might sometimes say this is my friend, but I'd be pretty careful when I did that. Sometimes it depends, as someone says in the series, you know, if it's just a one-off interaction with someone, you don't bog down in the language. But if it's someone that you want to understand the relationship more, you know, it's more important and long-term, then the way that we refer to each other becomes really important. I don't want to be a client of anyone's, for example, or, you know, there's words like customers and consumers in the disability sector that a lot of us don't want used about us. And, or, you know, someone said to me one day, what do I call you? And I said, a person, or you can even use my name if you like. So sometimes, Hilary, people are going for things like lifestyle assistant or, but I don't mind that in a way, because it might be that they're supporting the person to to make choices about what they're going to do with their time and how to live their life. And so sometimes they're going for what doesn't feel so disability-fied, if you like.
Yeah, and it does sound like it's a time when we need to address those the ways people perceive those relationships. Catherine, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us to tell us about your amazing series today.
Thank you, Hilary.
Catherine Marnie, Regional Storyteller Scholarship winner 2019 for the ABC, and her series is called A Fine Line. It's a 5-part radio series. It'll be playing across ABC Radio this week, and you'll be able to find it online too. You're listening to Life Matters here on RN.